Hello, movie and music fans. This is Sutton, your host on Sutton on Cinema and Sound. I'm joined here today by my father.
Hello, everyone. Mike here.
So it's been a really long time since we've covered a film. We've just, these past several episodes, we've been covering albums, but this is almost kind of, although this is a movie, this is definitely has a lot of musical influence in it. We are reviewing Magical Mystery Tour, the short film by the Beatles.
And when you say this is a film that we're reviewing or discussing, we probably should use that term a little loosely. This was not a major cinematic release by any stretch of the imagination.
Definitely not. This was the third film that the Beatles had been involved with, the first two being Hard Day's Night, which was actually a surprise success. That this is one of the, I think, the top 10 highest grossing movies of the year, and percentage-wise, it still remains one of the, I guess, highest grossing movies compared to the budget that was put into it. And The Help was somewhat less successful, but still successful, although the Beatles had a bad time during the filming of it, so they decided to put it into like the official kind of Hollywood esque production films. As expected, so that's why this movie is a lot more, has a lot more of a kind of homemade feel to it. It was directed entirely by them and quote unquote written by them, and Ringo Starr is even credited as the cinematographer. We have been calling this a movie so far, but it was actually a television special. They aired in Christmas of 1967. It was their, it was like the first big project they were involved with after the release of the bombshell that was Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band.
And the total running time for this film was about 52, 53 minutes, so more in line with a television special than a movie, certainly.
Yeah, also one of the things that, I guess a problem that arose while they were screening this movie was that in Britain at the time, there were only about 200,000 color televisions. So when it was originally broadcast, it was broadcast in black and white. And eventually, I think a couple weeks later, it was broadcast in color, but most of the people who saw this movie for the first time saw it in black and white. And a lot of the critical reviews were, by critics, were those who viewed it on black and white televisions. A lot of people say that this is one of the problems why the special didn't do well, because it's such a colorfully filmed movie. They could just lavishly decorated sets and costumes.
Although, quite frankly, Seth,
yeah,
if the critics had seen it in color, I'm not sure they would have been any kinder.
Yeah. This, I will say that this is a very colorful looking film. I think the color does, this is 1967, which is when I feel like the era of psychedelic music was really at its peak, as well as like the experimental avant-garde filmmaking. So the colors definitely do a big part in, I think, lending personality to the film. One of the interesting things about this movie, although it won't come as a surprise to anyone who's watched it, is that a lot of it is largely improvised. They basically, so the plot, quote-unquote plot of this movie is a group of people take like a stagecoach and just tour around to wherever they feel like and encounter different situations. They kind of bond during the situations that they encounter. And yeah, that's also kind of what the filmmaking was side of it was like. They just, a group of people, including the Beatles, of course, went on to a stagecoach and filmed whatever happened to them, no matter how interesting or boring it was. So as a result, a lot of the dialogue was very improvised.
If I were to describe this film in one word, it would probably be odd. There are some of the oddest images, I think, that have ever been preserved on film. You know, I grew up and the Beatles were probably the first band that I ever really got into. And the music was just brilliant. And in my view, I've always loved the Beatles, and the Beatles could do no wrong. And I saw this film, and finally I realized that they could.
It's interesting, like probably 30 so years later, and this really charged their image. This was definitely, I think, the first major project they're part of that got like scathing reviews, so much so that it took several years for, well, it wasn't until 1974 that the movie had a limited release in the United States, but basically all plans to broadcast it on television the way it was done in the UK were scrapped because of it. You, of course, mentioned the Beatles songs. Yeah, what do you think on about the song? Yeah, the songs. There were a total of six songs on this within this film.
Well, I love the Beatles music, and whenever we got to a Beatles song, I'm like, okay, this is an island that I can relax in and enjoy. The Beatles music was great as always. And some of them had a very different feel than the rest of the film. They seemed a little slicker, a little bit more professionally done. While the rest of the film, in large part, did really seem improvisational. You showed me what was called the script, and it looked like something drawn on a cocktail napkin. It was certainly not very well professionally thought out, and there wasn't a lot of storyboarding involved in this. It was just kind of letting it flow.
Yeah, also, this is definitely Paul McCartney's project. I think we were talking about the songs, and that is another factor that demonstrates that. There were a total of six songs on this film, and of those six, three of those were Paul McCartney penned tracks: "Magical Mystery Tour," "Fool on the Hill," and "Your Mother Should Know." And of course, there was the John Lennon song "I'm the Walrus," which is probably my favorite song within this film, and then George Harrison's very psychedelic "Blue Jay Way," and then the odd one out is "Flying," which is one of the few instrumental tracks the Beatles have made, and it is actually credited to all four of them. Like you said, the music videos, I feel like for 1967, are incredibly impressive, considering that this is well before the era of MTV. Generally, I feel like in terms of where this film, comparing this film to, like, the Professional Brothers, Hard Day's Night, and Help, it does continue the progression of the music videos. And yeah, I feel like the cinematography during those sections were well done, and I'm wondering if this filming of those music videos were part of like the improvisational filmmaking, or if that was done either before or after that part, because they just seem incredibly well planned.
Yeah, the music videos almost seem separate and apart and plugged in. And there was a, as you mentioned from the earlier films, kind of a progression in the music videos, perhaps a digression in the cinematic elements of everything else.
Perhaps, but that was something that their next movie, Yellow Submarine, would definitely redeem in many respects. The music videos, it definitely helped, like, obviously they're, as I've said, they're like really well shot and done. I feel like some of the imagery is definitely kind of random, as a lot of the other film is random. Like, this is the first time I've really kind of studied the individual shots, but in Blue Jay Way, there were some shots where, well, George is like playing on what looks like a violin, and then suddenly Paul, John, and Ringo come out and start playing soccer, which isn't really imagery that I think naturally think of when I hear the song Blue Jay Way. But if anything, the footage that they chose to play during the music segments just, I guess, kind of fit the atmosphere, even if it doesn't necessarily fit the lyrics. Another thing I felt about the movie was there were generally, I can't tell if I would call them attempts at humor. It seems like they were kind of trying to create a humoristic vibe to it. I feel like in terms of what the style of humor, I've seen like this it descri been described as surrealist humor, which I think is definitely accurate. It's definitely not anything that I think you would laugh out loud to. It's just more of the film always kind of tries to impress you by its weirdness, or yeah, it's just very.
The British humor here, and what we saw at certain times of the film were almost embryonic, Monty Python-esque. So there were some elements of it that had some of that kind of zany feel to it that you could see later on in Monty Python. And there are some interesting parallels between the Beatles and Monty Python. There was a scene in which Ringo's aunt is eating dinner, and they are just with a shovel shoveling spaghetti in front of her on the table. Reminiscent of Monty Python scene years later, in which a obscenely large gentleman is having food just kind of stuffed into him at a restaurant, at which point they say, "And would you like a mint?" And he eats the mint, and then it's what causes him to finally explode with his stomach contents plastering the walls. So it's kind of that element. And later on, George Harrison and Eric Idle of Monty Python became very close. And George Harrison actually produced, I believe, some of Eric Idle's films.
Yeah, I feel like that is the trend that this film kind of continues from the other two, where there are definitely some scenes that just feel like they are almost precursors to some of Monty Python's sketches. Also, the scene that you mentioned with them shoveling a bunch of spaghetti on Ringo, on the plate of Ringo's aunt, it was thought up by John Lennon. It was based on a dream that he had, where he was the one shoveling these piles of spaghetti on a lady's plate, and then he shared his dream to McCartney, and then they decided to incorporate it into the film. It's not really that seamless, though. I guess before the scene, the narrator throughout this movie is John Lennon. He mentions that the aunt is feeling like very hungry, and then, but other than that, it kind of really reflects the sporadicness, structure and style of this movie. I feel like another kind of element that showed that was the scene that was after the I'm the Walrus music video, where John Lennon was blowing up a balloon for like a girl, and it felt like a very kind of natural scene. I'm not sure if it was like that pl it was if it was even planned out. I think that it reflects how they were really probably just recording whatever was going on, and sometimes they planned out like, okay, we're gonna stop here and then we're going to like maybe film a marathon for the movie, but it really sh shows how improvised like how improvisational this film was.
This was one of the Beatles' rare misses. And I think they were at a point in time that their level of acceptance was so great that they probably thought that if they did something that was more or less almost like a home movie kind of improvised quality, that the audience would love it. And there is a scene that is interspersed throughout the film where they'll do something and then they'll cut to a large crowd that is applauding wildly, whatever they are doing. And that may have been their mindset at the time, that they have reached such a level of acceptance and love in the community that whatever they put out there was going to be wildly applauded.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Like, I think that the audience was probably supposed to mimic or parody like an audience as if the movie was being broadcast within a theater. This movie, of course, really casts up the Beatles' reputation back, and maybe a couple months after this movie was released, they came out with the hit single Lady Madonna, and a few months after that, they came out with Hey Jude, which really helped to set their reputation back in place as one of the, I guess, the leaders of 1960s culture.
Yeah, when you return to your core skills and the music, it brought the Beatles right back where they're supposed to be. And I think this was a film that was relatively quickly forgotten.
Which is shocking to me because the album that the accompanying album or slash soundtrack to this film makes a lot of references, clear references that this is the soundtrack to a TV special at the time. It even came with like a 24-page color booklet that had a comic reenacting parts of the film, which in my opinion is actually more cohesive than the film itself. I watched this film for the first time before buying the album, and then again after reading through the booklet, and I definitely enjoyed it more the second time, which I think might have been because I read the booklet. It helped me understand what they were trying to go for. Something else interesting about this film is how much it feels like Paul McCartney is really the one spearheading through this. I feel like this era of the Beatles in general was very McCartney spearheaded. This was coming off of the heels of their very successful Sgt. Pepper's, which was largely Paul's idea to have them play a fictional band called Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and wear these Johnny's like colorful costumes. And this likewise was his, largely his idea. I feel like that is also reflected in filmmaking. I think, like you mentioned, how they dress up in a lot of the psychedelic costumes, and it's kind of a very childlike, sense of fun dressing in these different costumes. And I feel like even in the roles he plays, like there are some scenes where the Beatles play like these magical magicians who are casting spells to make sure the tour has like the people on the tour have a really good magical time, and he's someone who like announces they're having a magical time as if he's like the one who's really kind of leading the whole thing.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of elements of Paul McCartney in this, with the costumes and almost the childlike exuberance at times. And John is more the contemplative, deeper thinker, more the lyricist, and Paul is more the melodies. So you do get more of a Paul McCartney sensibility throughout this film and this project.
Although I would say that perhaps one good thing about this film is this was actually shortly after the passing of their manager, Brian Epstein. So I think that must have had something to do with the timing on McCartney's part. I'm guessing that he probably had the sense that he had to like get the Beatles focused on, on account of like their unison and synergy and really putting their forces into creating, a really big project that would make them step out of their comfort zone and just get, focused on something else. Of course, as we've mentioned, this film did not do well at the time. Paul McCartney. Well, when a private screening was held, he was discouraged from releasing the film. He ignored the discouragement, and it was screened anyway. Probably the first time the Beatles had received unanimously, really bad reviews. They never did anything like this again.
Well, it was certainly, not everything is great, but we can still watch it and enjoy it. And I really enjoyed watching this film, not because it was a great film, but because it was the Beatles and a piece of history. There was certainly some pleasant music in it.
Yeah, it was not It was an interesting experience. I guess another thing that it was kind of refreshing seeing the faces of John Paul, George, and Ringo in like really high quality color film. And just seeing them act, it's a very refreshing experience compared to a lot of like the black and white footage of just them performing at concerts. Well, I hope you enjoyed this episode of as we turn to reviewing filmmaking once again, even if it was a very interesting film that we've reviewed. And this is such a non-cinema and sound.